Deuteronomy chapter 34, we will read verses 1 through 12. Then Moses went up from the plains of Moab to Mount Nebo, to the top of Pisgah, which is opposite Jericho. And the Lord showed him all the land, Gilead as far as Dan, all Naphtali, the land of Ephraim and Manasseh, all the land of Judah as far as the western sea, the Negev, and the plain that is the valley of Jericho, the city of palm trees as far as Zoar. And the Lord said to him, this is the land of which I swore to Abraham, to Isaac, and to Jacob. I will give it to your offspring. I have let you see it with your eyes, but you shall not go over there. So Moses, the servant of the Lord, died there in the land of Moab, according to the word of the Lord, and he buried him in the valley in the land of Moab, opposite Beth Peor. But no one knows the place of his burial to this day. Moses was 120 years old when he died. His eye was undimmed and his vigor unabated. And the people of Israel wept for Moses in the plains of Moab 30 days. Then the days of weeping and mourning for Moses were ended. And Joshua, the son of Nun, was full of the spirit of wisdom, for Moses had laid his hands on him. So the people of Israel obeyed him and did as the Lord had commanded Moses. And there has not arisen a prophet since in Israel like Moses, whom the Lord knew face to face. None like him for all the signs and the wonders that the Lord sent him to do in the land of Egypt, to Pharaoh, and to all his servants, and to all his land, and for the mighty power and all the great deeds of terror that Moses did in the sight of all Israel. You may be seated. What a beautiful epitaph, is it not? That Moses receives at the end of the book of Deuteronomy. When we look at it and we see that Moses, the servant of the Lord, died there in the land of Moab according to the word of the Lord. According to the word of the Lord, God keeps his word. And he buried him in the valley. Wouldn't it be awesome to have God perform your burial? How crazy would that be, right? That God just, you know, a hangnail on his finger scrapes the earth and there's the burial place, right? And no one knows the place of his burial to this day. I think that's put in there for a particular reason. And I think it has to do with this. We all have this affection for heroism, this attraction to even heroes of the faith. And I think that nobody knows where Moses was buried because God wanted to say, let him rest. After 120 years, I think God was saying, let Moses rest. Let him rest in peace. I mean, think about Peter and his tomb, and think about all the different places that we highlight and we put up in a promotive setting that's, you've got to go see, right? And so God says, after dealing with these people for 40 years, would you just let him rest? Verse 7, Moses was 120 years old when he died. His eye was undimmed and his vigor unabated. His eye means more than just his visual sight. It means his mental qualities, his mental and spiritual faculties. To have them undimmed meant that they weren't faint, they weren't weak, they weren't faltering. Nowhere in the last days could somebody go, Moses, you're out of your mind. Moses' mental acuity to his very last day was as strong as any other person. And it goes on to say that his vigor was unabated, his natural force, his energy. I mean, I'd love to have the energy at 120 that I had when I was 20. Many of us would love to have the energy of when we were 20 now, regardless of our age. And that's exactly what it says, though, is his vigor was unabated. It wasn't fleeing, it wasn't escaping, it wasn't disappearing. There was no sign of Moses, either mentally or physically or spiritually, beginning to fade away. Is that true of us today? And we know the physiology, we know that our energy fades, we know that stuff happens, but how much of that is also mental? How much of us allow our physical energy to just drain away? I love verse 9, and Joshua the son of Nun was full of the spirit of wisdom, for Moses had laid his hands on him. The passing off of authority and responsibility and leadership. How much better could we do that today? And then verse 10, and there was not arisen a prophet since in Israel like Moses, when the Lord knew face, whom the Lord knew face to face. He had such great intimacy. That's an idiom in Hebrew. Those of us who are literalists go, well, I thought nobody could see him face to face. That's a Hebrew idiom. It means he had such deep intimacy with God that it was as if they sat down for each meal and met face to face. Perhaps that's the reason Moses could go until 120 years of age, unabated and undimmed, because he had such deep intimacy with God. Moses exemplifies for us this unrelenting commitment to the relationship with God and to the will and the direction of God. How often through the journey in the wilderness, how often thinking back in Moses' life, maybe when he escaped Pharaoh and the doom that was to come to him, maybe even during then, but we know written in the 40 years in the wilderness with the nation of Israel, when Moses stepped in between God and the nation and said, these are your children. These are your sons and your daughters. And God, I know right now you want to wipe them out, but I'm calling you to keep your word. See, this is why I was never Moses. And most of us would fall into that same category, because we would have stepped aside and said, there you go. Have at them. And yet Moses exemplifies this commitment to the relationship with God and to the people of God. And in spite of that failure of disobedience, resulting in his not entering the promised land, Moses remained committed to the relationship with God. I mean, think about that. When God calls us to account for something that we have faltered in or failed in, how many of us are going to go, or how many of us can come and go, God, you're right. And yet I am going to be unrelentingly committed to you. Most of us encounter that. Most of us would be in the position of Moses where we struck that rock out of frustration and God goes, see, that's it. You'll get to see the promised land. You don't get to enter the promised land. And most of us would sit there and go, excuse me, God. You're the one that put me in this position. You put these people around me. You made me. Right? Is that, you don't need to raise your hand, but is that not most of us? And yet Moses shows us this commitment to the relationship of God and to the will of God in saying, I blew it. We live in a culture that it's all about blaming other people. And Moses exemplifies taking ownership of his own mess. So question number one for us this morning is, where do I currently find myself becoming fatigued in following Jesus? Moses was not fatigued. Moses' vigor is still strong. His eyes are still fixated. And I don't think that's the testimony of all of us this morning. I know it's not my testimony. I get weary in following Jesus. I get frustrated in following Jesus. And yet Moses is an example for us to look ahead and go, okay, what in my life needs to change so that I can have that same energy, that I can have that same vision, that I can have that same passion in following Jesus? Where currently do I find myself becoming fatigued in following Jesus? Let me have the kids come up. Awesome breaks, dude. I loved it. You're almost good enough to be in the Little League World Series. Almost. Okay, so I need 4 volunteers to help me with this example. Yeah? 1, 2, 3. Do I get a 4? 4. Okay. The 4 of you guys go ahead and stand up. Let's put 1 over there, 1 right here on this corner, 1 on this corner here. And then I'll let you go over by the table over there. Nope, down on the floor yet. Okay, and we've got four more. So will each of you, let's see here. Will you go help him? Why? Why? I'm going to explain in a minute why. So can you go help him? Will you help him? Let's see. Who wants to help this guy? You'll help him. Okay. Do you want to go help? Do you want to go help Caleb? Okay. Excellent. Good. Let's see here. We'll give, some people thought I was going to preach in this. No. Okay. Leave that right there for the moment. We'll give this one to Caleb. Okay. Right here. Okay. I'm going to give you like a minute. Take a stack. Take a stack. Take a stack. And I want you to build the highest tower that you can build. You're going to build on the table. You're going to build on this chair. You're going to build on the floor. And you're going to build up here on the stool. Okay? Go! Go! Nope, go! Go! That's your building material. Go! See, we all want to change the rules, don't we? We want to argue about the material we're given with. We want to argue about the foundation that we have. We want to... Here, I'll move this out of the way for you. Okay, Larry just told me I have to preach short because of my batteries. So. You're done? Okay, you're done? Okay, hold on. Don't touch it. Here, let's sit back down here on the floor. Good? Good? All set? Almost? All right, excellent. You guys done? Almost? Okay. All right, let's sit back. Actually, let's even back up here a little bit, okay, so that we can see. Nice job. I really liked it. It was not fair at all. Hey, I love what you've done. How important is it to have a good foundation? Is it really good? It what, Jonathan?
It's really good for this one. They all had good foundation.
Really? They all had good foundation? Well, let me try something over here. Let's see how good of a foundation it was. Okay, you ready? Earthquake comes. That doesn't do too bad, does it? But then all of a sudden I go, oh my goodness, look at that. Was that a good foundation? Was that a good foundation? No? No? Why not? It's tippy. It's not stable, right? It's kind of like some of us in this room. It's tippy. What about this one? Okay, Jonathan, you come here. Come here, Jonathan. Come up here. Right here, right where I'm standing. Okay. You jump up and down as hard as you can. Oh, that looks like a pretty... Here, I'll tell you what. Nope. Okay. So sit down there by Caleb. Okay. Put your hands on the steps. Now, I want you to push the platform as hard as you can. Wow, that seems to be a pretty good foundation, don't you think? But the foundation's pretty good, right? What do you think about this one?
That one's cool.
You did a great building job, right? But probably like something like that is gonna, not too bad, right? Until it stops. But see, you actually had a nice foundation down there. It wasn't too bad. This was a little iffy, right? Okay, what about this foundation over here?
That one's great, and that
you can't shake it. I can't? Is that a challenge? Huh? Let's see here. How? Ooh. Oh, no, it's starting to come down. I'll bet you if all of a sudden we did something like this. Oh, wow. No touching it. I didn't touch the cups. So how important is it to have a good foundation? It's really important. So what makes for a good foundation? What are some of the things that make for a good foundation?
Solid ground.
Solid ground. That can't be easily shaken. Cement rock. Yeah. Something that's really hard and solid, right? So what's that? That broken house is crushed. Were they built on a solid foundation? They were built on sand, yeah. So we're going to talk about a solid foundation the rest of this morning, okay? What do you think that solid foundation is?
God.
It is God. You are absolutely right. We're going to see Moses talking about that in the remainder of Deuteronomy. Okay, so you guys can go back and I want you to listen to us talking about a solid foundation, okay? All right. That should make Caleb clean up his mess. Let's see how many times I can knock it over in the course of walking around. Moses' final words, right? Chapters 32 and 33. Some of you thought I was just going to stick in 34 the whole time. I'm not going to cheat like that. We're going to talk about the other chapters. 32 and 33, Moses' final words. How many of you remember, without looking at the passage right now, what 32 was going to lead us into? Sorry. Wow. Can we say literalist? What was 32? We talked about it last week. I kind of gave you a little hint into it. Moses was going to do something. It's a song. It's a song that God specifically instructed Moses to write. I mean, we have all sorts of songs, right? You go through the Psalms and we've got things that are written actually back in Exodus. We have a couple of songs. But this is one that God actually told Moses, I want you to write this for the nation of Israel so it will be a witness to them, right? Remember that? Anybody remember that? Two of you. Excellent. Look back at chapter 31, verse 19, so that you don't think I'm just making this stuff up. Now, therefore, God speaking to Moses, now, therefore, write this song and teach it to the people of Israel. Put it in their mouths that the song may be a witness for me against the people of Israel. That it may be a what? And what's a witness? Somebody that testifies to the truth, or something that testifies to the truth. So this song is going to testify to the truth. The truth what? But before that, the truth for God, the truth about God, as a testimony against the people of Israel. Again, copies of scripture were not like just all over the place. You couldn't just go down to the nearest market and pick up, you know, one of the translations that were around. And so in an effort to help retain commitment to God, he has Moses write this song. And in this song, in chapter 32, we see an interweaving of promise and blessing, affirming God's greatness, along with some rebuke and some punishment. If you haven't read the entire chapter, I encourage you to do so. But think about it for a moment. Isn't it more likely in poetry that we will remember and take to heart more so than through prose? How many of you will remember more of a song you hear the first time than of something you read the first time? It's our tendency. It's the nature that's written within us. And so throughout here, Moses talks about the future of Israel's disobedience and God's faithfulness. He talks about the strife that Israel will face in their disobedience to God, and he talks about the redemption of Israel upon their return to God. In chapter 33, he rolls into the blessing of the tribes of Israel, and to bless generally meant to endue with power for success and prosperity and longevity. So Moses, the father now of the nation, if you would, at least the father head, right, of the nation, is speaking into them power for success and prosperity and longevity. It was common for superiors to bless subordinates or to bless children. Here's Moses blessing the children of Israel. This is Moses' opportunity to say a lot to the nation of Israel. Yet Moses does something incredibly key that many of us lose in today. Moses, in his opportunity to say anything that he wants, to challenge, to invite, to rebuke, to encourage, and anything, he keeps the focus on God. We're going to look not at every verse by any means, but we're going to look at a few verses in these couple of chapters. Look at chapter 32 with me. Moses starts out the song, "Give ear, O heavens, and I will speak, and let the earth hear the words of my mouth. May my teaching drop as the rain, my speech distill as the dew, like gentle rain upon the tender grass and like showers upon the herb. For I will proclaim the name of the Lord and ascribe greatness to our God." So Moses, this is the prelude to the song, if you would. And what does Moses declare that he's going to do? He is going to proclaim the name of the Lord and ascribe greatness to our God. And so he begins in verse 4. "The rock, his work is perfect, for all his ways are justice. A God of faithfulness and without iniquity, just and upright is he." The rock. What a great way to start a song, isn't it? Do we ever sing about a rock? Yeah? Rock of ages. The rock of my salvation. We just sang it last week. Christ alone, cornerstone, right? What other songs? There is no rock, there is no God like our God, right? Rock of ages. So we already have this idea in our mind. And if we look through the passage, if you're just jotting down things, that's fine right now. Verses 4, 15, 18, 30, and 31, Moses comes back to this image of the rock. Now think about this. When Moses is writing this song and the rock is what pops into his head, he is imagining in his mind several rocks along his journey. Exodus chapter 17, the nation of Israel is a little bit thirsty. And God invites Moses to do what? Strike the rock, and what happens? Water comes out. In Exodus chapter 33, Moses is longing to see God because he's basically said, look, unless you go with us and unless I can be a part of this, then just do away with us all. And God says, I'll tell you what, you climb up this mountain and I will set you on a rock. And I will cover you so that all of my glory passes by and you will get to see my back. So think about this. Moses is drafting this song and into his mind pops the rock. He's like, the rock. Yeah. Yeah. God gave us water in it. I got to see the back of God in it. And then, oh, Numbers 20. That very rock that he was commanded to now bring water by speaking to is now the very thing for which he's punished and won't get to enter himself into the land of promise. The rock, all these positive things that he gets to experience in the rock, the wilderness, the mountainous rock that he gets to climb and receive the Ten Commandments. The rock that he breaks water out of, the rock that he's held there by God. What an incredible testimony on the rock, and then the rock, which becomes his very punishment. And if we fast forward in time in 1 Corinthians chapter 10, we come to find out something really important about all of these rocks. Paul tells us that the very rock from which Moses brought water is Jesus. So perhaps unbeknownst to Moses, he is reminiscing about the rock that played so significantly throughout the life and the journey of Israel and yet didn't probably fully understand that this is Jesus Christ. All of these images would have flooded into his mind. We see later on, particularly through David in the Psalms, the various images in Scripture of the rock. In Psalm chapter 31, the rock is a refuge, a place of protection. In Psalm 62, we find that the rock is a fortress of strength, not just a place to be protected, but it is a fortress. It is a commanding thing. In Psalm 27, we find that the rock is a place where he is going to be lifted up, a place of exaltation. In Psalm 92, we find that the rock is a place of surety, a place of rightness. It's a place that has been tried and true. In Psalm 144, we find that the rock is a place of training and preparation. And in Psalm 95, we find that the rock is a place of salvation. And these themes are shared over and over and over again throughout the Psalms, but the rock is something more than just a little pebble that we pick up and go, oh wow, rock. When Moses started to pen this song and rock came to mind, he wasn't sitting there going, oh well, that's a novel idea. God the rock. It had already been a testimony within his life that God is the rock. And he goes on to give qualifiers for it. The rock. His work is perfect. You got to keep in mind, in Hebrew, that word perfect means complete or whole. It's not partial. It's complete. So the rock is the whole thing. It's not missing any part. Any crevice or crevasse which exists in the rock is part of the perfection of the rock. So when we look at the rock and we see justice and we're wrestling with why some justice is, and in our mind some justice isn't, we remember the rock is perfect and complete. The rock brings perfect justice. So the rock is perfect. All of his ways are justice. When we struggle with whether something is justice or not, it's our own personal internal struggle. It is not a struggle with God. Because the totality of God is perfect. The totality of God is justice. He goes on, a God that is the rock of faithfulness. God is faithful. God as a rock is not established on shifting sand. God is solid. Regardless of the foundation or the circumstances around God, God is solid. He is faithful. He can be returned to over and over again. God is without iniquity. There is no flaw in the rock. You know, we can go out and we can scale a granite face. And if you hit it at just the right part, it'll break apart. Right? Put the right amount of explosive in there. Put the right wedge at the right crack. If there's a crack in the rock of God, it is not a flaw. If there's a crack in the rock of God, it is part of his character. It is not something wrong with the rock. Moses goes on to say the rock is just. Not just does he offer justice, but the rock itself is just. And upright is the rock. You know, I happen to wonder, which side is the top? Which side is correct? Which side does God sit upright? Oh, well, maybe through history, God reoriented himself. Have you ever heard that, well, in the Old Testament, God was just, and in the New Testament, God was grace? Have anybody ever heard that? Come on, it's okay. Raise your hand. Here, let's see. Let's try this out. I don't know if any of you that have had surgery. Raise your right hand for a moment. Okay. Raise your left hand for a moment. Okay. Raise both hands for a moment. Okay. So you guys are all functionally able. So how many of you have ever heard that, well, in the Old Testament, God represents justice and, you know, he's a God of war and stuff. And in the New Testament, he's a God of grace. How many of you have ever heard that? At some point in time, we may have even believed it because you look at it, you go, boy, it kind of seems that way, and yet God is upright. Hebrews says Jesus Christ is the same yesterday, today, and tomorrow. So the rock is upright, regardless of our perspective of the rock, and that's the problem. Was it soccer practice that we were talking? Maybe not. Jim's like, huh, I don't know what you're talking about. Don't talk about soccer now. See, the issue is when we think that our perspective is truth, rather than looking at truth, which is the rock. So Moses begins this beautiful song by declaring the nature of God as the rock, the perfect rock, the sure rock. Perfect, complete, whole, faithful, upright, without any flaw, without any iniquity. And then you can go on and you can go through the passage and it talks about how this rock loves the people of Israel. How this rock found the people of Israel wandering in the desert in a dry and barren land and pursued them and brought them in. And you fast forward because, as I said, throughout the whole thing, we see these beautiful blessings, but we see these beautiful curses. Because basically it says you will wander after some other gods. You will leave the rock and you will pursue other gods. Just look at it briefly with me. Jump down to verse 15. But Jeshurun, that is a word for the nation of Israel. But Jeshurun grew fat and kicked. You grew fat, stout, and sleek. And he forsook God who made him and scoffed at the rock of his salvation. See, Israel held on to the rock through the wilderness. Well, they kind of argued at times, right? They kind of disobeyed at times, but they stayed around the rock, but then they got to a safe place and things settled down and they began to stretch out their legs and they began to wander around and they found pebbles that were more intriguing to them than the rock. And they thought, oh, this might be nice. And then they scoffed at the large rock. But that sounds like a children's story that could be developed, doesn't it? And then you go to verse 18. You were unmindful of the rock that bore you. You forgot the God who gave you birth. See, Israel's wandering away from the rock. They're wandering away from the faithfulness of God. But God says, at the point in time that you turn back to look at me, the rock, I will still be here and I will still welcome you. While you want to be disobedient, you want to pursue other gods, I will remain here where I am. Pick up at verse 39. In Moses' song, God now makes a declaration. See now, so chapter 32, verse 39, see now that I, even I, am he, and there is no God beside me. I kill and I make alive, I wound and I heal, and there is none that can deliver out of my hand. So God enters into the song here, enters himself into the song here, and he makes his eternal declaration, I am that I am. I am who was, I am who is, I am who will be, I am. And there is no God beside me. You can look at all of the pretty rocks around you, and there is no rock like me. He goes on to say that I kill and I make alive, I wound and I heal. Let's be honest, we don't like to accept that, but it's the truth of God. Right? God knows the number of hairs on our head and he knows the number of days in our life. It is God who gives birth and it is God who takes life. And in our theology, we have to wrestle with that. But it's the truth of who God is. So Moses, in this song, begins by declaring, I will exalt the name of God. And the picture that he gives to Israel is the picture of the rock. The very picture that he experienced along the journey, that Israel would have experienced along the journey and brought them into this mindset. So he finishes out the song and then he transitions. We have a little bit of interlude, if you would, there, right? about Moses' death foretold. Look at chapter 32, the end of it. That very day, the Lord spoke to Moses and said, you're going to die. How encouraging is that? Right? Chris, you ready for that? You ready for that day when God goes, it's your time. By the way, I'm going to make you work for your death. Climb this mountain. How is that? I mean, come on. Elijah gets, and Moses has to climb the mountain to die. I don't know. Maybe it's God's sense of humor. I feel like every time I climb a mountain, I'm going to die. Some of you picked up on that. Thank you. Then we enter chapter 33, which is Moses blessing the nation of Israel. So 32 is the song, 33 is the blessing, and yet they're kind of interwoven together. If you look at it, this is the blessing, chapter 33, verse 1. This is the blessing with which Moses, the man of God, blessed the people of Israel before his death. He said, the Lord came from Sinai and dawned from Seir upon us. He shone forth from Mount Paran. He came from the 10,000s of holy ones with flaming fire at his right hand. Yes, he loved his people. All his holy ones were in his hands. So they followed in your steps, receiving direction from you. When Moses commanded us a law as a possession for the assembly of Jacob, thus the Lord became king in Jeshurun when the heads of the people were gathered, all the tribes of Israel together. And then he goes through these blessings. And you can march through them another time. But I want to fast forward us to verse 26, which is the end of the blessings. Moses declares, much as he does at the end of the song, verse 26, there is none like God. In the midst of the blessings, he takes them back to the song where God declared of himself, I am, and there is no other like me. He keeps their focus not even on the blessings. He doesn't keep their focus on, oh, these are the things you're going to be getting from God. He keeps them focused on God. He changes their vision, their attention, because boy, don't we often get fixated on what we're going to get? Good or bad, we get fixated on what we're going to get rather than who's giving it in the process. There is none like God, O Jeshurun, who rides through the heavens to your help, through the skies in his majesty. This is the second mention of this in these two chapters. The emphasis that the other gods you may try out will not compare. They will fail. They are not sound and true. They are not worth building on. And then we go into verse 27. The eternal God is your dwelling place. Oh, the rock. The rock, your refuge, your fortress. See the twist on words now, bringing them back to who God is. The eternal God is your dwelling place. Now I love this. And underneath are the everlasting arms. You have to love it when you have no conversation with the music team about the themes. And then God interweaves the songs into the process of what you're going to talk about. This foundation, there's a reason God is called the rock. There's a reason Jesus says, if you're going to build a building, don't build it on sand, build it on a solid rock, a firm foundation, because it is that solid rock, the firm foundation that is underneath, that is the everlasting arms to carry you. See, if you want to build on sand, then you can't count on it being there to carry you. If you build on the rock, here's the thing, you might start sliding. But that rock will hold its place and will hold you in place. The rock is a safe dwelling place. It is a refuge. Verse 27, now he throws in this other key word, the eternal God. The God who was and is to come, that God is eternal. So it's not that this rock is here and then it gets destroyed and then it crops up over here and gets destroyed and crops over. That rock is eternal where it is. It is eternal that when we feel abandoned by God, it's not God who's changed. We keep thinking that somehow God like flicks us away like a bug. We realize that we're to be anchored to the rock, and it's us who tend to wander away from the rock. And the patience and the mercy and the grace of God to allow us to wander. Doesn't take time this week and read through that song, because that song tells so much about humanity. It's the story of my life. It's the story of our life together. You will wander. No, I won't, God. I'm sold out for you. And he sits there and goes, yes, you will. I now have a quasi-adult child, right? He's married and he's out of the house and all that kind of stuff. And I just sit there, and there are times in the past year, and I'm sure there will be times ahead, where I sit there and go, you are going to mess up. He's like, no, I'm not. No, I'm not. I'm gonna, you know. And you're like, yes, you are. And the most difficult thing, and this is where God has much more grace than I do, because the most difficult thing, the bloodiest I get, is when I have to bite my tongue and not go, I told you so. See, the grace of God is he goes, you're going to do it again, but I love you. And my arms are underneath you. The eternal God, you will wander. You want to know what part of the spiritual journey is? You ready for this? This will shake some of our own foundations here. But some of us in the spiritual journey, we wander from God, and let's just assume for the sake of illustration, because I don't know how else to do it. Here's the rock, right? And I'm going to put it over here so I don't knock over the solid, right? So here's the rock, and we've been sitting here, and we've been enjoying life with God and all this kind of stuff. And then some little pebble out there gets our fancy. So we're kind of like, ooh, I can reach it. Right? I can reach it. Oh, my ankle's already messed up, so it's okay if I fall. I can, it's okay. And we go, I know you're just trying to be an accountability partner. But the rock is so pretty, and so I wanna read, and so I can reach, hold on a second, I can reach it, right? We're trying to stay attached to the rock, but I can reach it, and then we start to realize I've got the space, I can reach it, and so I go and I get the pebble. And I'm fascinated by it for a while. But then I'm like, I can't build on this thing. It's a pretty jewel. It's a mineral, it's whatever, but I can't build on it. And then all of a sudden I go, so wait, where's God at? Oh, I think it was back this direction somewhere. And so I start looking and I start wandering. And here's part of the spiritual journey, because where was I before with God all the time? I was here. And all of a sudden I come back and I go, that doesn't look like the God that I thought I knew before. Because I get to see a different side of God. See, here was legalistic Terry. I know the rules. Here are the rules. You do this and you don't do this, and you practice these things and you don't practice these things. But then something attracted me away from that legalistic side of God, right? And I become fascinated. And when I come back, I go, wait a second. Jesus is on the cross. And there's a thief next to him, and he looks at him and he says, today you'll be with me in paradise. That doesn't work with the legalistic side of God. Are we grasping this? And so sometimes the journeys that God has us on, when he lets us wander away sometimes, are so that he can show us another part of him. This part still exists. He says, be holy. Right? In what capacity are we supposed to be holy? As God is holy. Is God perfect? Absolutely. Do you realize that our call to Christianity is to be perfect like God? And yet in God's grace and his mercy, he allows us to wander, because he goes, you focus so much on my perfection, you've missed my grace. And so I look and I go, I'm pretty confident that's where I was. Like, there's a part of it that looks pretty close, but boy, that's a different look of God than I'm used to. And God goes, yeah, because you become fixated on one part of me. And sometimes you need to wander and mess up prodigal son? Let's stretch our theology a little bit. Who is better off or who is worse off in that story? The prodigal son or the elder brother? When the story ends, the elder brother who sat on the legalistic side of God the entire time missed out. The prodigal son understood the pain of journeying away from God. But in the end, he understood more of God than he had before. And so Moses in this song is reminding them, God is solid, he is forever, he is eternal, he is perfect, he is just, he is righteous, he's without any flaws, and he is there, and you can wander away from him. But he's going to be right there for you to return to. And when you return to him, you might get shocked a little bit. Because the God that you knew before might look a little different. And it's not because God has changed. It's because your perspective of who God is has changed. But the key in that, okay, Terry, you're starting to go a little bit wacky on us because, you know, no. This describes the rock to us. Right? Please hear me. This describes the rock to us. Why am I being emphatic on that? This describes the rock to us. It is not the rock. Some of us in our Christian journeys, sitting on the stool, have made this the rock. God goes, no, I'm just describing myself to you in here. I've got to use your pathetic language. What? Limited, okay. Pathetic and limited, they're not synonymous? Okay. I have to use your words to describe who I am, which is impossible to do through your words, but I'm trying my best. And so God's like, give me a little grace. Because I'm working with you. So God goes, of all the images around the world that Moses could pick out to use to keep Israel fixated on the God of their salvation, God gives him the image of a rock. And that image carries through the song and it carries through the promises, the blessings to each of the tribes of Israel. Moses initiates the song of remembrance, the song of witness, by calling attention to God. He begins and he ends the blessings with praise to God. Moses, in the midst of writing a testimony that will be the mirror for which Israel will look at themselves, starts and ends with God. And when they're fed the, here's what you get from God, it starts and it ends with God. As I've been chewing on this week, I've come to this realization of far too much of our conversation, far too much of our talk, far too much of our interaction lacks God. I mean, we talk around God perhaps, but we miss God. I love the fact that Moses here, his final words, his last words, his big convocation to the nation before they graduate into the promised land points the entire nation over and over and over to the rock. I mean, that's the word he uses over and over in the song. The rock of your salvation, the rock for which there is no others like it, the rock. I think Moses is painting a picture that says, here is something that is solid. It is tried and true, and you can trust it and you can grab onto it regardless of where you're at right now. And that's what I want to invite us into consideration with this morning, because every single one of us is in a different life circumstance right now. Some of us are sitting on the side of the rock and we have never moved from it. And we know God one way with one characteristic, and that's all that we know of God. And we're like, and this is God. And when somebody comes and challenges that, we're like, no, this is God. Some of us are stuck on the cliff of the rock and we need to jump. Some of us. Some of us have gotten lost in the jungle. And we've started to kind of go, you know, I didn't like everything about the rock. But when I was on the rock, these mosquitoes were a little less nasty. These snakes were a little less slimy. These spiders were a little less enormous. These, you know, you can kind of keep going on and on. And we kind of see the rock, but the rock looks a little different than what we're used to because we always knew that one face of the rock. And so we're a little uncertain about returning to the rock. And God's saying, I have more of myself to show you. Come back to the rock. Some of us are of the place right now where we're enjoying excursions and hikes around the rock. We're kind of like, oh, I want to see this area down here, and I want to see over here. And I say, may I express a caution? We need to do that. But it's easy to follow a rabbit trail away from the rock in doing so. And we need to be cautious that in experiencing and encountering the different facets of God, we don't get drawn away on a rabbit trail that takes us away from the rock. And it's also important for us to not get fixated at the one spot on the rock. The rock is a foundation. We are to build off the rock. Right? We're to build on and to build off the rock so that others can find the rock. But the rock is the foundation. And I just want to invite us this morning to reconnect our gaze with the rock, wherever we're at. And so my second question for us this morning, I can almost read that. Where in my life do I need to be reminded of the sure foundation of God? Where in my life do I need to be reminded of the sure foundation of God? Where are things in my life that seem to be crumbling a little bit and chaotic a little bit, and I'm just going, I don't know that God is a rock. I'm not sure that God's just not a gravel pit at this point in time, not the rock. Where are those places that because I've been wandering in the jungle, I need to look back and go, my footing is getting a little sketchier. You know, I say this lightheartedly. It's fun sometimes reading about an article of somebody who's gotten lost and rescued. Because more often than not, what you hear is something like, I was on this trail, and I've been on this trail several times, and I was on this trail, and the next thing I knew, I had no clue where I was. Have you read those articles? There's somebody in Hawaii just in the past few months that did that. There was somebody elsewhere that did. Anyways, don't get distracted by the trail. Make sure you know where the rock is. Make sure you're coming back to the rock. If we have wandered, it's time to return. If we're sitting on top, it's probably time to come down and look around at the different characteristics and aspects of who God is. I think Deuteronomy has become beautiful because it's not just about these legalistic laws. God is the solid rock, eternal, perfect, immutable. And we need to learn to grab onto that rock rather than pushing away from the rock. Some of us have been trying so hard to exercise our muscles, right? We're trying to push away. We're trying to push away rather than embracing. And yet if we have pushed away God's eternal rock, he says, underneath are my everlasting arms. Where do I need to rediscover the rock in my life? How was Israel supposed to rediscover the rock? The word. Return. Return. Be attentive when it wasn't working out to go, huh, this isn't working out and maybe I should return to the eternal rock. So I invite us to return to the eternal rock. To find sure footing once again in our life. Father,